Sahana vavatu, sahanau bhunaktu, sahavirjan karavavahai, tejasvinavadhitamastoma vidivishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jagannath. Okay, page 23. The Yamadutas continue. Above the five senses of perception, the five working senses and the five objects of the senses is the mind, which is the 16th element. Above the mind is the 17th element, the soul, the living being himself, who, in cooperation with the other 16, enjoys the material world alone. Because if you count the mind, then technically you can also count, then I say, because when you have the intelligence, false ego, and polluted consciousness. So that takes care of the subtle. So that only leaves the earth, water, fire, air, and ether, right, the gross. But that's taken care of by the sound, touch, taste, like this, because they come from there, right? So they're represented in this way. So that's why you can say there's 16 elements, right? Can you say there's 24? Or you can say there's 16, right? It even, you see, is that you can also say that it goes down to, I think, then there's only 9. Or 11, 11, 11, yeah, like that. So then they'll take either the five gross and the senses, or, you know, something. In other words, everything's coming out of everything else. So it's just a matter of what you want to bring out. I think Brahma talks about the 9, like that, in Brahma Samhita, that there's 9 elements in the world. But we always see is the mind is always counted as one of them. Right? So it'll always be an odd number with the mind. Right? So 9, 16, 23, it's just a matter of how far. Some will even take it to 33. Right? Does that make sense? So that's to include, I think, lust, greed, envy, illusion, madness. You know, they'll count those, or fear of death, illusion, bodily conception, like this. So all these are all elements. So it's just a matter of how far you want to take them. Like that, but Kapila Muni, he's accepted the 24, so that's why we use that, right? So the 24th is that polluted consciousness. Yeah. You know? Like that, yeah. Okay. And he enjoys the material world alone, because it's just himself, and then he's with everybody else. He may cooperate with others, but it's he himself who's enjoying the world, right? The living beings enjoy three kinds of situations, namely happy, distressful, and mixed. The subtle body is endowed with 16 parts. The five knowledge-acquiring senses, the five working senses, the five objects of sense gratification in the mind. So you can take that as the subtle, right? But we'll generally take it as mind, intelligence, false ego, and polluted consciousness. But the point is, since the mind manages the senses and the sense objects, therefore, then they're counted also as subtle, because the sense of smell, the sense, they're subtle. You can't technically see the sense of smell. You can see a nose, but you can't technically see the sense of smell. So that's why then you can count them as subtle. The subtle body is an effect of the three modes of nature. It is composed of insurmountably strong desires, and therefore it causes living entity to transmigrate from one body to another in human life, animal life, and life as a demigod. So the main point of the subtle body is the strong desires, insurmountably strong. Because there isn't a material process to actually overcome desire. You can change the desires from pious to impious or back to pious. You can change what area that they're in, but you can't actually change that there is desires. Yes.
Sometimes we experience that while practicing a devotional service, some desires, you know, they just fade away naturally.
Yes, yes.
But some desires, they become like very strong.
They're the insurmountable ones. It's meaning here is just in general that you can't get up. But at the same time, you can't separate the mind and the senses anyway, because even in the spiritual platform, they're together. The problem is we're using the material mind and material senses. So then what it is that two things are there. The ones that just go away easily are newly acquired ones in detail, right? Like that. It's not that the necessarily, yes, because there's a deeper and then there's some details of it. So details, then those may go away just by the chanting process. So it's not that those ones that are difficult aren't going away also, it's just that they're bigger, so they take longer. Does that make sense? So that's why many go away and then a few are left. Yeah, so that's not something to worry about. Then, it appearing that they're stronger, that's only because there's not other ones to distract. Right?
It's more focused.
Yeah. Yes, that's all. It's just more focused. So, it's not that it's any more, it's actually less than what it was before, but in comparison with other things, it seems more. Right? Yeah, so that's why we shouldn't get bewildered and think the process is not working, or, you know, I'm not getting anywhere, things like that. No, the process is working, that's why it's there. But at the same time, that's why then we see the great personalities who say, oh, I have so many desires, this and that. So what they're working with is practically nothing, and that practically nothing is all for Krishna. But still, they'll say, well, I'm not a devotee, so therefore. When the living entity gets the body of a demigod, he is certainly very jubilant. When he gets a human body, he is always in lamentation. And when he gets the body of an animal, he is always afraid. Right? So then this establishes how. You're thinking it's going to be, when he gets the demigod, he'll be jubilant, human body, then, you know, sometimes too, it's happy. And then when, you know, he gets the, you know, goes to the hellish, then he suffers. No, but here's that. He's jubilant as a demigod, he's always lamenting as a human being, and when he gets the body of an animal, he's always afraid. Animals are always afraid. Right? Yes. Because they don't actually know, and they think they're the body, so anything could happen to the body, they're always afraid. Like that. So, yes, it's eating, sleeping, mating, fearing. So some people, eating is more, some sleeping is more, some mating is more, some defending is more. Or, you know, whatever combination you like, you know, you can. That's what I was saying. Some people really like, you know, like going on a roller coaster ride because it scares you, or, you know, all these kinds of things, or watching horror movies, or, you know, bungee diving, anything like that that'll scare you. Then they think this is nice. You know, just like you say, why is that nice? No, it's one of the four. Some people think eating's nice. Some people don't even care about eating. You know, these guys that fit into the, how you say, zero size dress, they cannot care about eating. If they do, they wouldn't be able to fit. You know? In all conditions, however, he is actually miserable. His miserable condition is called samsriti, or transmigration in material life. 50 to 51. In his purport to text 51, Srila Prabhupada comments. Right? Remember, this is all the Yamadutas. So, you know, they know, because they're there, they're part of the whole process. The sum substance of material conditional life is explained in this verse. The living entity, the 17th element, is struggling alone, life after life. This struggle is called samsriti, or material conditional life. In Bhagavad Gita, it is said that the force of material nature is insurmountably strong. Daivi hyesha gunamayi mama maya duratyaya. Bhagavad Gita 7:14. Material nature harasses the living being in different bodies. But if the living entity surrenders to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, it becomes free from this entanglement. As confirmed in Bhagavad Gita, mam eva ye prapadyante mayam etam tarantite. Thus his life becomes successful. Right. So someone, you can only overcome Maya if you surrender to Krishna. Right? By your own determination, we may elevate ourselves within the material sphere from good or bad, but we can't actually get out of Maya's control. Right? Because we have to remember, Mahakalapur is outside the universe, but it's not outside the Mahatattva. Right? So there's still that influence. The Yamadutas continue. The foolish embodied living being, inept at controlling his senses and mind, is forced to act according to the influence of the modes of material nature against his desires. So you can't feel too bad, because here he's saying in general the living entities are inept. See, just sometimes some are a little better at it, and sometimes we're a little worse at it. See. He is like a silkworm that uses its own saliva to create a cocoon and then becomes trapped in it with no possibility of getting out. The living entity traps himself in a network of his own food of activities and then can find no way to release himself. Thus he is always bewildered, and repeatedly he dies. Not a single living entity can remain unengaged even for a moment. One must act by his natural tendency according to the three modes of material nature, because this natural tendency forcibly makes him work in a particular way. Right? So he has to act according to that natural nature, because the modes of nature make him act that way. Right? So we'll say nature is by what you have acquired by at birth. Right? It's not the birth in the family, but you come with the nature. Right? So generally, the family you're born in and the nature match, because the consciousness of the living entity and the consciousness of the parents generally go together. But sometimes it doesn't. There's something that makes them. Otherwise, why are they family? But the nature may be different. So that's why you'll sometimes see parents of a higher nature, children of a lower nature, or parents of a lower nature, children of a higher nature. You know, so there's something in common, but not enough that they actually have the same nature. So then that nature is the modes you'll be under, because the chart is there. That's the modes. That's how the modes are going to work. Now you're either controlled by that and are going to use that for your own sense gratification, that, or you're not controlled by that and you engage that nature in Krishna's service. But it doesn't change the influence of the planets, what they're going to do. Does that make sense? We'll think, I'll do something and change how the planets will work. No, that won't change. What you'll change is that how you're affected by it, how you engage those things, is those only describe situations. Right? They don't describe, your free will. They only describe the situations you'll be in. And because of certain modes, generally in that situation, you would do certain activities. Yes?
So activities within the situation will be according to the guna, and then the situation itself, it will be karma.
Yes. And then what you do with it, then that you'll decide. That I have from previous karma, this. I also have guna from previous karma.
Yeah.
But still, I am free at any moment to do whatever I like. But generally, we don't, because we're comfortable. We identify with that guna. So we think it's me. So you always do something according to the identity you have.
Yes. What it is actually, it's a combination of the modes of nature. It's not a real nature.
No. That's why we're saying here, it's just this is your acquired nature. Now, the Yamadutas only speak this far because they don't know what's beyond. Right? Themselves being Karmakandis, you know, are pious persons who follow the Veda, have knowledge. You can see they're very knowledgeable. Right? So they don't know what's beyond the material world. They only know that there's this world, and there's you do good work, and then you get the results of them. And they themselves, having gotten good results, but at the same time it not being carried on, then they understand how people fall from the position, how things are miserable. So they're in the position like demigods. But they're miserable because no one takes care of them. Right? Now Yamaraj does, so they're in great, indebted there. Do you understand? So they can speak very frankly in this matter. Does that make sense? Yeah. But they're not speaking just by their own frustration. They're just speaking Shastra. Mm-hmm. Right there. But they only know that far. That's the thing. They don't know the nature beyond. They'll mention the soul, but they don't understand how the soul can be beyond. They know about Vaikuntha and this and that, but they're not, somehow or another, it doesn't really come into the context. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What is your identity? How is it perceived inside?
Yamadutas.
But it's been not as a soul?
No, they're the soul. Otherwise, how do you transmigrate? How do they bring the person down and he'd throw him off a mountain and he doesn't die? And how is it they put him into another body? Because it's the Yamadutas will train you up. Like when Prabhupada talks about being trained to be a pig, you're in a human body because that's where you identify. Right? But then they'll give you no food but stool. And they'll give you a really, really, you know, miserable stool. Right? You know, like that. And so then once you kind of adjusted that so it's not so bad, you know, okay, it's not ideal, then they'll give you better quality stool. And then you go, ooh, this is nice. And then you're ready. And then they stick you in the pig's body. Because otherwise, if you stuck the human into the pig's body, he would freak out, you know. You would wonder why the pig keeps coming into your house and raiding the refrigerator, right? You know.
So they say 2 weeks is that how long we get adjusted to?
That I'm not sure, but there's I know there's 9 months, generally you get a nice nap.
No, they say that's here. When you're put into the situation, within 2 weeks, more or less, you're adjusted.
Oh, 2 weeks you're adjusted. Okay, so then 2 weeks. Yeah.
I don't know, I heard 4 months, you just obtain the situation.
Oh.
Like even prison or, you know, like very extreme circumstances.
Takes 4 months.
But it's just normal.
Just normal, it's 2 weeks. Extreme is 4 months. Mm-hmm. I've noticed 2 years if it's a whole emotional change. Like kids that come to the school, after 2 years, then they've always been here. Yeah, then they identify like that. So they've always been here and just they fit into the scene. Before that, they're still kind of, they feel new. For 1 year more, but the second year it's subtle. Like that. So if when they come, you're here, then you're always here. But if after, and if during that 2 years you come, you're still just with them. But if after they've been here 2 years and you come, you're the new guy.
Okay.
Yeah? But if within that 2 years you come, you're an equal. And if you're there before, then, you know, you're a senior. Somehow or another, it's with that with the kids. But that's like a very complete adjustment. But I think what you're talking about here is just accepting it and being able to work with it. That they'll do quicker. Okay. One must act by his natural tendency according to the three modes of material nature, because his natural tendency forcibly makes him work in a particular way. So they're taking natural to be, what is the natural means according to your conditioned nature at this in this body. Right? They're not taking natural meaning the nature of the soul. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. Though sometimes the jiva does not want to do activities, he is forced to do so by the subtle body. Then he becomes bewildered like a silkworm and does not know how to get out of the tangle. Swabhavi kaihi means arising from previous impressions. Right? So that's nature. His natural tendency means what arises from previous impressions. Right? What impressions we've done before, that makes our swabhava or our nature now. What we do now will make our swabhava in the future. So there'll be a general connection, but in this lifetime, next lifetime, will continue, but then it will have a different identity. So you'll have the same identity this life. Next life, you'll have a different one. But the nature will be just a continuation of whatever you've done in this life. Yes?
So when Krishna talks to Arjuna and saying you will be forced to act according to your nature, he's talking about this nature.
Yes, this nature. Means he's a Kshatriya, he's saying this is all useless, I'll take up the dharma of a Brahmin, I'll go to the forest, and I'll just be peaceful there. But Krishna says, no, by your nature you'll be forced. You know, you're a Kshatriya, you'll fight for, you know, religious things, you'll do all these things. So when you get to the forest, you'll do the same thing. You know, dacoits come there, then you'll fight them. You know, the animals come and bother the sages, you'll fight them. You know, you'll do the nature of a Kshatriya. You won't be like a Brahmin.
So then when we see, you know, because devotees come from different backgrounds, somebody came with a degraded nature.
Right.
So it's not really going to change.
No, it means the field won't change, but the purity can change. Just like, let's say, the person was doing some kind of trading, but always cheating, giving bad stuff, and, you know, any way he can make a shortcut, he becomes Krishna conscious. So there's a Vaishya nature there. That won't change. But he'll become purified, so now he can do business properly and that, and not cheat. And does that make sense? Yeah, that's what I mean. We're not saying how much time. Some will be quicker, some will be less. But that's if that is the nature. Then it's just purifying the nature. Sometimes we see just by association and by that degraded nature, there's so much mode of ignorance. When you add ignorance to something, it changes the nature. You know, so when they come, they may act like a Shudra. But as they get purified, then you see passion starts to come up because the ignorance goes down. Then you start to see a little Vaishya stuff. Then if it keeps going, then you'll start seeing passion becomes more. Ignorance basically goes away. Then you see the Kshatriya nature. And then as goodness comes, they'll become better at that, and then they'll start turning into Brahminical. So if their nature was Brahminical, but it's covered, then you'll see them go up. If their nature was Shudra, it'll remain that. Just they'll become purified. So, but that's the problem is sometimes devotees can't catch that or can't see that. So they say your nature won't change. No, it won't, but it'll be purified. And so how covered it was, and that you have to see. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's why it's more difficult to work with these things. You have to be more, there has to be the knowledge, there has to be that practice.
So. Yeah, because once we label the person, that's like you mentioned before, that's what in our mind, and
yes.
That's how we perceive the person,
yeah.
But actually it might be something different.
Yes, so as far as what label, we don't need to label, we just make it clear what are the duties. And as a devotee, you perform your duties for Krishna. So whatever position you're functioning in, then you perform those duties. Now if you find with time, due to purification, that there's another aspect you'd rather work with, then you work with that. But the point is it has to match the nature, it has to work. So we don't need to identify them in that way, but at the same time, then that means that someone has to be honest about it. Right? Because in the Vedic system, then you don't necessarily have to make that distinction so much, but generally you do. Because if you don't, then people will cheat and try to get a little bit of everything. So that's why it's there. Point is, if you're going to do business, these are the rules. If you're going to have a job, these are the rules. If you're going to administrate, these are the rules. If you're going to do Brahminical, these are the rules. So you have to follow whichever one you want. You can't pick and choose as you like here. Oh, we're a devotee, we're beyond. No, you have a nature, you work according to it. But we don't have to label that, oh, this one's a Brahmin, this one's no. Because for us, the ashram side is the main thing. That's the spiritual ashram. So for us, that's primary, and the occupation is secondary. But when you're giving someone service, you'll look at occupation. How they situate themselves, what possession they're going to situate themselves to perform that duty, that's going to be the ashram. But when you give a service, that you look at varna. You know what I'm saying? It doesn't matter if someone's a brahmachari, or a grihastha, vanaprastha sannyas, is that, let's say, if they have a managing nature, they're still going to manage. Right? So it doesn't matter by the ashram. So therefore, the varna becomes the element that you look at how someone will be engaged in service. Right? Does that make sense? So that's why sometimes you hear varna first. But it may be first, but it's not necessarily the most important. Like chant your japa is first, but developing love for Krishna is the most important. You know what I'm saying? You know, we're going to develop that love through the process of devotion. You know, so we are in this age, we're going to use chanting. That's a new one. Yeah. Yes.
I heard during Prabhupada times, there was one yogi in Yuhu who was a barber or thief. So Prabhupada gave him service to chase away dogs at night before he used to away at night. So he engaged Prabhupada and yogi still going on.
Most likely. He's saying that in Bombay, that when Prabhupada was there, somebody was a thief. They came and Prabhupada engaged them to chase away the dogs at night because thieves stay awake at night.
While writing books, dogs used to make a lot of noise.
Yeah, yeah. So he chased them. Like that. No, Bombay is kind of famous for engaging all kinds of... Because it used to be, now not so much, but before it used to be... They would notice that at a particular time of the year, just the temple would fill up devotees, there'd be so many there, so much happening and everything like that. And you know, and then at another time, then everyone was basically disappear. And then after a while, they notice there's a pattern. It's every year at this time they come, and every year at this time they go. And then after a few more years, then somehow or another, I'm not sure how they caught it, these were all people who lived on the street. They must have seen one living on the street and asked, hey, what happened? You know, and then they figured out that all the people that lived in the street knew you could go and get, you know, food and shelter during when it's rainy and there's no place to stay. And then after 4 months when it stops raining, then, you know, they just go back out on the street. You know, because they preferred their independence. You know. But it took them a while before they noticed that. But, you know, those kind of things happen. So Bombay's famous for engaging all kinds of individuals like that. It's one of their specialties. Okay. In this regard, Srila Prabhupada comments in his purport of text 53, the svabhaviki, or one's natural tendency, is the most important factor in action. One's natural tendency is to serve because the living entity is an eternal servant of God. Right now he's bringing in the actual svabhav. The living entity wants to serve, but because of his forgetfulness of his relationship with the Supreme Lord, he serves under the modes of material nature and manufactures various modes of service, such as socialism, humanitarianism, and altruism, right? So this nature of the soul to serve, right, to serve the Lord, serve his laws, serve, you know, the devotees, then becomes perverted into serving society and all these different things like that. So these things that are introduced, they appear to be good. We'll think that being nice to everybody is good simply because it's service. But we're not connecting that. We think it's like that because it's good, because the soul by nature has the nature to serve. But we don't understand this is not real service. Does that make sense? So that's why someone might ask, why is the tendency to, at least the modern context, to be deviated into a pranamoyic viewpoint, you know, and more of an ideal pranamoyic viewpoint. One, it makes all the money, so therefore then that's practical and of course like that. And two is there's the ideals and all that are based on the natural nature of the soul to serve, but it's not actually service because it's not according to Krishna's direction. And because it's not according to Krishna's direction, people do things wrong, therefore there must be justice. You're right, and so it's a complete package. It's a full package. Keeps you busy, like that. You know, and so no one even notices. So they don't act according to religious principles. They act according to this, and the worst part, they don't even enjoy their senses. You know, they have meetings. They don't have good food. They all don't have good hours. They don't have any, you know, time to themselves or good time for relationships, and so a good view. But when do they get to look at it? You know, I mean, one of the few good views, you know, was the floor just below where Bhakti Chumar's is, and then they built the Panchatattva temple in front of it. So that one ruined the view. They had even offered, if they had just told him about this, he would have given the extra money to build a flat roof so he didn't lose his view. Yeah, because a flat roof, you can do more with it and everything. But yes, you have something. Okay, but the floor above that still has a good view. But the person who used to view from there is not viewing from there anymore. So, and the person who does have it is also not viewing from there much anymore. So, You don't know the room I'm talking about. That was the first one. Then the one above that was the second one we talked about. Okay. However, one should be enlightened in the tenets of Bhagavad Gita and accept the instruction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The one give up all natural tendencies for material service under different names and take to the service of the Lord. So that's the actual Swabhaviki, rather than Swabhaviki meaning the conditioned nature or the natural condition, the nature, the natural position according to one's conditioning to the natural position according to the actual nature of the soul. One's original natural tendency is to act in Krishna consciousness because one's real nature is spiritual. The duty of the human being is to understand that since he is essentially spirit, he must abide by the spiritual tendency and not be carried away by material tendencies. Right? So that's the point. So therefore, we have a conditioning, but we should not be carried away by it. So we shouldn't allow the conditioning to get in the way of us doing as is recommended, following the Vedic system and connecting our life to Krishna. Right? Does that make sense? If we allow that to get in the way, then the whole point is there. Because we may say, oh, we're from another part of the world than where the Vedic culture is practiced. That's only, it's been, in other words, it's been a longer time since it was practiced there. Since it was practiced on the whole planet, so now it's being practiced less in the area where we may be living. Right? So then the whole point is, but what's the point? It's about offering things to Krishna and about pure devotion. That's what we should be speaking about, not about what I want to be offering to Krishna. Right? No, I have the right to offer this to Krishna because I'm from here. No, it's about what's the quality of the offering. That's the discussion. Understand? So in other words, the focus becomes adjusted. Like that. Only if we identify as the soul and servant of Krishna, then we can engage the nature, whatever it is. It's not a problem what the nature is. It's a problem if we identify strongly with that nature, and therefore it starts to get in the way of devotional service. Because it may be your nature, but then, okay, that's all right. You want to act in a certain way, do that. But don't try to change the whole world because you want to act that way. Because then if you're saying, oh, I'm being controlled by the Vedic culture and I don't like that because I'm from here, then why would you try to control everybody else who's also not from there? Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Because wherever you're from, you know, there's something unique about that place. You know, I noticed that was something that was interesting when it was in one part of the world. What you do, you go over to the next town, they don't do it like that. They have a different concept. You know, even the same preparation, it's different. You know? So that means all the regional things and the weather's different, how they dress is different and everything like that. You know? So that's the thing. Somebody's from Melbourne, so it's cold, it's windy all the time, it's rainy, and so they're going to wear a particular kind of clothes. So they can't go up to Sydney and now claim that, you know, I'm from there, so I dress like this. And not only that, everybody here should dress like that. You know? So that's the whole thing, is that when we say, is no, from here, but not everybody's from the same part of the world we are, even not from the same town. I mean, from where I came from, there's a handful of people with devotees came from there. You know? Wherever it is, and then you say, okay, we're from the same city, but did they come from the same area? Like lots of devotees from New York. How many from the Bronx? Right? There's a few. You know, Brooklyn, there's a few. You know, Queens, there's a few. You know, like this. So therefore it's different. So therefore, that's why we can't get carried away by this. Is if we're unwilling to be controlled by the Vedas, we should also be unwilling, according to our own philosophy, to try to change and influence the rest of the world. Means we want to act in a particular, do it. Who cares? But, you know, accept, you know, how people view it. You know, if we don't have to view it through the Vedic, we view it from our local viewpoint, people will view it according to the local viewpoint, not according to the Vedic. So what you do, they'll view according to how they please. You can't complain. We can't pick and choose what we like of the Vedic and what we don't like of the Vedic. It's that you accept the Vedic principle, and then we try to apply it. you know? Understand? That's the... So therefore, we should not be carried away by material tendencies. We engage material tendencies, we use them, but we don't get carried away by them. The Yamadutas continue. The fruitive activities a living being performs, whether pious or impious, are the unseen cause for the fulfillment of his desires. Right? So that's the thing. He fulfills his desires through performing activities. Right? Does that make sense? So the fruit of actions, that's what actually fulfills his desires. He's done an activity before. That's what's going to fulfill it now. It's not necessarily what you're doing now. It's that your fruit of activities in the past, whenever they fructify, then you'll get the result. You know, the fruitive reaction fructifies very quickly. Like not looking left and right before crossing the street and getting run over by a truck. They somehow, the turnover of this karma, the fruition of this karma is very quick. Right? You know, but some things take a long time. You know, like becoming a billionaire. Seems to take a little longer than most would like it to. You know, only, you know, 5 or 10 people have made it to there. You know, so. Yeah, yeah. So it's always that. So someone drops off and it's like, hey, we have up a spot. You know? This unseen cause is the root for the living entity's different bodies, right? Your fruit of previous fruit of activities. That's why when Pariket asks, Dharma, why is it, who's beating you? Then he says, that's hard to say. Some say is this, some say is that, but you can also look at it that my previous activity is what caused this, so technically I'm beating myself. Because of intense desire, the living entity takes birth in a particular family and receives a body which is either like that of his mother or like that of his father. Right, you know, it's always saying, "Oh, he looks just like his mother. Oh, he looks just like his father." You know, yeah, it doesn't seem to be. I mean, you may have some feature of one and some feature of the other, but there seems to be a prominence of one of the. Yeah, <And so, laughs> just because we're in this chapter, but if the child looks like the gardener, then you might get worried.
Imagine that when the 20% says, yes, this child looks like the man.
Looks like the man. You don't want to get into those things like that. So he either looks like the mother or like the father. That's always going to be prominence. That's why then the nature should be, if the nature is equal, then it doesn't matter, right? If both, let's say both are Brahmins, whether it's has a body like the mother or a body like the father, it's still going to be Brahminical. But if it's mixed, then you don't know which it'll be and then how it'll work. That becomes, that's why one's careful that the nature is equal. The gross and subtle bodies are created according to his desire. So his desire, therefore he does his fruit of work, that creates the gross body. So how you are functioning as a subtle body, that determines your gross body. Right? Yes. It depends on your parentage. It will match your fruit of activities. So if your fruit of activities don't have a proper, you know, guna and karma don't match, then you might have a body that the gross, the subtle body also don't match.
Yeah, sometimes, especially in those stories, you know, somebody with very bad features has a good character, it's vice versa.
Yes. No, it just means that then where the effect is. So if they have good character, but bad features means they've committed some sin on the physical platform. So then that's gone. But they didn't on the mental platform, so they still have the character. Yeah. So or you see as somebody, they have bad character, but they have good physical features. So they do good work, but they have bad character, bad nature of how they interact. So then that will be more. So, yeah. Well, you only hear about those more because people want to hear about people who look good, not the ones that don't look good. Srila Prabhupada comments, the atmosphere of the subtle body at the time of death is created by the activities of the gross body. Right, so what you do with the gross body, then that determines the atmosphere of the subtle body, because that's what you use it. Right? Thus, the gross body acts during one's lifetime, and the subtle body acts at the time of death. The subtle body, which is called linga, the body of desire, is the background for the development of a particular type of gross body, which is either like that of one's mother or like that of one's father, right? So what I do with my gross body this lifetime is going to create transformations in my subtle body, right? So in this life, the gross body is acting, but at the time of death, it's the subtle body. So whatever I've generated in the subtle body from the activities of the gross body, that subtle body is going to generate my next gross body, right? Which will either match the mother or the father. Yes?
Lord Chaitanya says that whatever we, and Krishna says, whatever we lack at the time of death, we will have it.
Only at the time of death, not while you're cooking lunch. Or you're on your own then, right?
So it means, but the subtle body is created by the activities of what we did, so it's human. And
yes.
Then let's say we transfer to Gokul.
Continue. You got to go cold. That's not good.
It's perfect, but what about the subtle levels?
So why do you care that it comes along with you? Or?
I want to come along with me.
No, but you have the spiritual. So you won't have the gross. You won't have the. When you go to the spiritual world, you don't have the subtle body from here. That's still the spiritual world. It has nothing to do with here. No. Like that. So, you understand? But the point is that how developed is your subtle body on the spiritual platform? That's what you're going to start with. You understand? If you're a neophyte, and then you chant Hare Krishna, remember Krishna at the time of death, you'll be born in Gokul. So you have a spiritual body and spiritual subtle, it's all there. You have the spiritual mind and everything like that. It's not so much gross and subtle. It's all expansions of the soul. Right?
So all that life can be.
So, but the point is the amount you've spiritually developed will be that of a neophyte, though you're doing it from the neutral stage of Brahma Bhuta. You know, so, you understand? How far you got spiritually there, but you're not a neophyte, meaning there's anartas and all these other things and that kind of jazz. But you haven't developed necessarily much of a taste or an attachment or these kind of things. But because there's no material things getting in the way, it can be developed very quickly. Right? Now, if one was very sincere about developing, then one will very quickly come into the contact of the eternal associates of the Lord, because they're also living there in Braj. But you only have contact with them if you're interested. You know what I'm saying? That's why it's foolhardy to say, you know, oh, we're a community, we don't have to worry about all these things, we just do it well, we're just being practical, we just work everything in when we can. Because that's what will happen to you in the spiritual world. Plenty of cow dung patties to make, there's babies to feed, there's husbands to wash clothes for, there's all kinds of stuff to do. So there's plenty to keep you busy as a community member there in Braj. You know what I'm saying? It's the same thing. But if you're determined, you want to be Krishna conscious, though you haven't necessarily developed very far, then that will be your mood. That's the part that will remain. In other words, the conditioned part will go, but what will remain is someone who's sincere about becoming Krishna conscious, though they're not necessarily much Krishna conscious. And so they will quickly get the association of these devotees, and they'll very quickly develop that purva rag, and so then they will very quickly come into Krishna's association. And if we're cool on just, you know, where it's, you know, it's cool to be cool, then, you know, then you can go for quite a while. Then here we have it, we're going along fine, and then the night of the Rasa dance comes, and you know, somehow or another our relatives aren't appreciative of us going. You understand? But then, that Krishna's arrangement, because we are there, because we are devotees of Krishna, therefore then that desire then is ignited, and then we want, and so that will then burn up whatever is left over that keeps us from being so serious. And then depending upon if that was pretty, you know, fairly instantaneous, you know, very quickly, then we'll be arranged to go if it's not too late. You know, it gets too late into it because you have to be there before for the whole pastime. But it was just a matter of you didn't get to go in the first couple of minutes, and then, you know, because we're working on the platform, one moment's like 12 years or more, so therefore, you know, a few moments of that is, you know, could be a few hundred years, right? Does that make sense? So then they go, but if it's longer than that, then one doesn't go that night, then one's purified and then qualified that the next time, then one will go the next night. You know? But the idea is, why miss a night? You know, if it's like, what does it matter if we miss a few nights? Then we can miss a few more. Does that work? So that's why we're serious here. Because there's all these things, because why is it, one could say is no, but why isn't it just very, you know, strict, this and that, and this is exactly what it is. One, we don't like that, because we want to be independent. But two, is then where's the free will? The point is, it's about free will. So just as the material works on free will, the spiritual also works on free will. We have to want that. And then wanting it, then we have to qualify. Not just that I wanted it, why isn't it happening? You know, so it takes time. If a human being is taught to change his subtle body by developing a consciousness of Krishna, at the time of death the subtle body will create a gross body in which he will be a devotee of Krishna. Or, if he is still more perfect, he will not take another material body, but will immediately get a spiritual body and thus return back home, back to Godhead. Right? He will create a gross body in which he will be a devotee of Krishna. Right? So that gently means you take birth in the family of devotees. Right? Or if it's less than demigods, they're technically devotees. But it's not, you know, they're not the ones we look at generally when you're looking at, you know, the determined, you know, mood of the sampradayic devotee. Right? Though they're appropriate devotees. This is the process of the transmigration of the soul. Therefore, instead of trying to unite human society through pacts for sense gratification, that can never be achieved. Right? That's the point, is that you try for it, it won't happen. If we try anything material, it will not happen. Right? Does that make sense? Like that. It is clearly desirable to teach people how to become Krishna conscious and return home back to Godhead. This is true now and indeed at any time. So the point, okay, say, oh, well, you know, that applied when Prabhupada was here, now things have changed. No, they always apply. Eternal is eternal. The Yamadutas continued. Since the living entity is associated with material nature, he is in an awkward position. But if in the human form of life, he is taught how to associate with the Supreme Personality of Godhead or his devotee, this position can be overcome. 55. But it's, you know, but how far they're taking it. So they're taking it that even you take it here, it'll still be a neophyte understanding, because it's, yes, he's doing everything right. That's why it's working. He's following all these rules. Right? So still they're taking it as rule. It's correct what he's saying. But they're just seeing his rules. That's why they're not understanding. It's not that they go, that they say all this and they go, oh, this is what you guys are talking about. Right? Yeah. So in other words, they even see worship of the Lord as the set of rules, which also it is, but that devotional aspect is the point. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. By association with Prakriti, one is in bondage. By association with the Lord, one becomes liberated. Srila Prabhupada adds, the word Prakriti means material nature, and Purusha may also refer to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. If one wants to continue his association with Prakriti, the female energy of Krishna, and be separated by Krishna by the illusion that he is able to enjoy Prakriti, he must continue in his conditional life. If he changes his consciousness, however, and associates with the supreme, original person, Purusham Shashvatam, or with his associates, he can get out of the entanglement of material nature. Right, associates with the supreme through hearing his holy name, worshipping the deity, hearing the Bhagavatam and that, or through the association with the devotees. Right? In summary, the living entity is an eternal servant of God, but he comes to the material world and is bound by material conditions because of his desire to lord it over matter. Right? So what the secondary is the matter. Right? The primary is the love for Krishna. Right? Liberation means giving up this false consciousness and reviving one's original service to the Lord. This return to one's original life is called mukti. As confirmed in Srimad Bhagavatam, muktir Hitvan yata rupam swarupena vyavasti tihi. Srimad Bhagavatam 2:10.6. Okay, so in other words, we're taking it by here. We're not going by their particular realization. We're going by what they say. So then this is they. But if the human form is taught how to associate with the Supreme Lord of the Supreme Personality of God or his devotee, his position can be overcome. This position, being controlled by the modes and everything like that. Right? Does that make sense? So, what they're saying is correct, because this would be the natural form. Right? So they understand. Someone's a devotee, they don't bother them, things like this. But now we'll get down to verses 56-68. Yamaduta's evaluation of the sinful life of Ajamil. Now, evaluating Ajamil, they don't see he's a devotee. They don't see that he's doing so. Therefore, according to them, he belongs with them. Right? The Yamadutas evaluate the life of Ajamil, who, in the beginning of his life, was a first-class respectable Brahmin. But due to the receiving the lusty glance of a drunken prostitute, he became distracted from his duties and became the most sinful of men. Right? Received a lusty glance of the drunken prostitute. Doesn't mean she's not with someone else, but being a prostitute, then the point is networking. You understand? So therefore, you know, by a glance, you can, you know, open the doors for future customers, then there's no problem. Right? Supporting his new illegitimate family by cheating and plundering, he abandoned all Vedic principles. Thus the Yamadutas claim that since the sinful man did not atone for his sins, he must be brought to Yamaraj for proper punishment and purification. So he may have been a proper Brahmin, but he became sinful, and up to this time he's not done any purificatory rites. Right? So by their judgment, he belongs with them. The Yamadutas continue. In the beginning, this Brahmin named Ajamil studied all the Vedic literatures. He was a reservoir of good character, good conduct, and good qualities. Firmly established in executing all the Vedic injunctions, he was very mild and gentle, and he kept his mind and senses under control. Furthermore, he was always truthful. He knew how to chant the Vedic mantras, and he was also very pure. Right? Because he may know these things by skill and things like this, you know, being born in the families and that, but it's not necessarily that they're pure also. Right? But he was pure. Ajamil was very respectful to his spiritual master, the fire god, guests, and the elder members of his household. Indeed, he was free from false prestige. He was upright, benevolent to all living entities. and well behaved, right? So these are all the duties that one, the householder is supposed to do, but specifically Brahmins are supposed to have, right? Anybody who's in the Vedic culture should have this, but to this degree, and that you'll generally see this specifically in Brahmins like that. It may be in others by individual, but in Brahmins it should be there in general. Does that make sense? He would never speak nonsense or envy anyone. 56 to 57. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. Having spoken of the natures of Dharma and Adharma, the servants of Yamaraj now illustrate Adharma by showing how Ajamil was fit to be punished. In two verses, they speak of his righteous nature in order to show how his sinful nature was not suitable. Shila means good character, vritta means proper conduct, and guna means good qualities like tolerance. Right? Does that make sense? So what he says, so here we can see is that the guna is being specifically said here is the good qualities like tolerance. You know, tolerance, humility, you know, respect, all these aspects. So that's the point, is that you have an activity that's there, but if the gunas don't match it, even though the skill is very good, it disturbs people. The Yamadutas continue. Once this Brahman, Ajamil, following the order of his father, went to the forest to collect fruit, flowers, and two kinds of grass called Samit and Kusha. Okay. On his way home, he came upon a Shudra, a very lusty fourth-class man, who was shamelessly embracing and kissing a prostitute. The Shudra was smiling, singing, and enjoying as if this were proper behavior. Both the Shudra and the prostitute were drunk. The prostitute's eyes were rolling in intoxication, and her dress had become loose. Such was the condition in which Ajamil saw them. 58 to 60, Srila Prabhupada comments. While traveling along the public way, Ajamil came upon a fourth-class man and a prostitute who are vividly described here. Drunkenness was sometimes manifest even in bygone ages. So then that means we understand it wasn't Kali Yuga. Right? And then we're, you know, by the symptoms, it doesn't appear to be Satya Yuga. Right? Although not very frequently. In this age of Kali, however, such sin is to be seen everywhere. For people all over the world have become shameless. Long ago, when he saw the scene of the drunken Shudra and the prostitute, Ajamil, who was a perfect brahmachari, was affected. Right? So that's why these things, it's not done. You can say, but it's our right to do this. No, you want to do this, do it in your own time, in your own place. But if it's in the public, it may affect others. Their thing is, well, what's their position to get affected? Well, what's your position to affect them? That's the whole point. It's not seen completely. Due to ignorance, they see it in a self-centered way. Nowadays, such sin is visible in so many places. Yeah, I was having one devotee tell me is that, you know, going to university is basically, when there's a break, walking into the university before the classes, then between the class, wherever you walk, somebody's doing something that, you know, basically would make, you know, this, probably make this Shudra and this prostitute embarrassed. You know, like that. You know, they're talking about the professors, they would come along because they have to see this stuff every day. And if they see something different than normal or something a little like that, then they'll become, whoa, that's different. Or, you know, you know, and then the kids will get embarrassed and stuff. But. Nowadays, such sin is invisible in so many places, and we must consider the position of a brahmachari student who sees such behavior. For such a brahmachari to remain steady is very difficult unless he is extremely strong in following the regulative principles. Nevertheless, if one takes to Krishna consciousness very seriously, he can withstand the provocation created by sin. Right? So that's why before it was like the place where the devotees would go to do Harinam every day in New York previously, one of the main places, was Times Square. Times Square's on Broadway. Broadway was where all the weirdo places are. Like that. So, you know, that's the point. So because they're Krishna conscious, then they don't get disturbed. You know, it's just when they get to those places, they just go a little quicker, right? Kirtan party speeds up, everyone looks at the street, and you know, like that, yeah. Yes. In our Krishna conscious movement, we prohibit illicit sex, intoxication, meat eating, and gambling. In Kali Yuga, a drunk, half-naked woman embracing a drunk man is a very common sight, especially in the Western countries, and restraining oneself after seeing such things is very difficult. Nevertheless, if by the grace of Krishna one adheres to the regulative principles and chants the Hare Krishna mantra, Krishna will certainly protect him. Indeed, Krishna says that his devotee is never vanquished. Kaunteya pratijanihi nave bhakta bhaktaf pranashiti. Bhagavad Gita 9:31. Therefore, all the disciples practicing Krishna consciousness should obediently follow the regulative principles and remain fixed in chanting the holy name of the Lord. Then there need be no fear. Otherwise, one's position is very dangerous, especially in this Kali Yuga. The Yamadutas continue. The Shudra, his arm decorated with turmeric powder, was embracing the prostitute. When Ajamil saw her, the dormant lusty desires in his heart awakened, and in illusion he fell under their control. As far as possible, he patiently tried to remember the instructions of the Shastras, not even to see a woman. With the help of this knowledge and his intelligence, he tried to control his lusty desires. But because of the force of Cupid within his heart, he failed to control his mind. Right, so we also get the idea he wasn't really very well situated in devotional service. Right? He may have been practicing nicely the Vedic system, which is meant for Krishna consciousness. And so he may be worshipping the Lord and all this, but it's part of just the duties you're supposed to. Right? Does that make sense? Like that. 61-62, in his purport to text 62, Srila Prabhupada comments, unless one is very strong in knowledge, patience, and proper bodily, mental, and intellectual behavior, controlling one's lusty desires is extremely difficult. Thus, after seeing a man embracing a young woman and practically doing everything required for sex life, even a fully qualified Brahmin, as described above, could not control his lusty desires and restrain himself from pursuing them. Because of the force of materialistic life, to maintain self-control is extremely difficult unless one is specifically under the protection of the Supreme Personality of Godhead through devotional service, right? So therefore, then that's the only way. And so they're only also speaking just on proper performance of duty and doing whatever is there. So then they can see is that, you know, he's going to have problems. The Yamadutas continue. In the same way that the sun and moon are eclipsed by low planets, because nowadays it's considered that all these kind of things, this is not a big thing, because in the modern context, relationships aren't very developed, so sex just simply means actually just the sex part, right? But the Vedic concept, because you're dealing with relationship and intimacy, therefore all of that is part of the sexual. So when he says practically, it just means leave out that last bit. Right? Because the point is the upper part of the body, that's the first face of Cupid. The lower part's the second. So nowadays, it's only considered the lower part is actually the sexual and the upper part's not. But in the Vedic, no, it all goes together. The first leads into the second. You cultivate the first, you'll get the second. Does that make sense? So, yeah. The Yamadutas continued. In the same way that the sun and moon are eclipsed by a low planet, right, because Rahu is considered a lower planet, the Brahmana lost all his good sense. Taking advantage of the situation, he always thought of the prostitute. And within a short time, he took her as a servant in his house and abandoned all the regulative principles of a Brahmana. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. He could not protect himself from falling by jnana and by his steadiness in dharma, but he attained Vaikuntha after restoring himself by Namabhas alone. This shows the comparative inherent strengths of dharma, jnana, and bhakti. Right? So dharma, he was very well situated in dharma. He knew the shastras well, so he was nicely situated in jnana. He wasn't a jnani after liberation, but he was situated nicely. So neither by just determination in Dharma, neither by the knowledge of jnana could he protect himself. But we see as he's elevated to the platform of Vaikuntha by Nama Bas, not even the pure name. So bhakti, even in its basic stage, is more powerful than Dharma and jnana in advanced stages. Srila Prabhupada adds, by speaking this verse, Sukadeva Goswami wants to impress upon the mind of the reader that Ajamil's exalted position as a brahmana was vanquished by his association with the prostitute, so much so that he forgot all his brahminical activities. Nevertheless, at the end of his life, by chanting the four syllables of the name Narayana, he was saved from the gravest danger of falling down. Swalpam apyasya dharmasya trayate mahato bhayat. Even a little devotional service can save one from the gravest danger. Devotional service, which begins with chanting of the holy name of the Lord, is so powerful that even if one falls down from the exalted position of a brahmana through sexual indulgence, he can be saved from all calamities if he somehow or other chants the holy name of the Lord. This is the extraordinary power of the Lord's holy name, right? Now, why mention this one, right? Because you have, you know, eating, sleeping, and defending, right? Or you have meat eating, you know, how you say, intoxication, gambling. But this is the one that, how you say, is the whole reason living entities are technically in the material world, because they want to control, they want to be the masculine and control the feminine. So in that original state, or the adi rasa of that, that means conjugal. Right? And then from conjugal, expand everything else. Right? Means we're how you say, we're in the position we are, then conjugal. From that, then you're going to get parental. That'll produce children. Right? You know, from that position of conjugal, from that others who are in the same, then you'll get friends. Then you'll have, you know, those junior to, or you'll be junior to others. You know, you're in your position because the same thing with your parents. Right? And then there's going to be those you appreciate, and then taking out farther, then you get the other things. Now we get the other side. Okay. Balanced. Yes.
Complete.
Complete, yes. Twice in a day, not bad. Yeah. That puts together, that's a full second.
Yeah.
That's 11 moments. Ah, wait. Third moment, yes, okay. Okay, then. So this is the extraordinary power of the holy name. Therefore, in Bhagavad Gita, it is advised that one not forget the chanting of the holy name even for a moment. Satatam kirtayanto mam yantas cha dridavrataha. So, the most powerful attractive element within the material world can be countered by serious chanting of the holy name. Does that make sense? Yes.
Sometimes we get into such serious distractions also. We have similar types. When we try to chant those, still the distractions.
Yes, but the point is, as long as it works, it works. You have an alternative? You want to sing Kalho Naho or something? Or I was Hindi ho, not Western ho. I guess she's also maybe a Hindi ho. Yes? But you keep chanting, you keep fixed. That's why we practice, so that when these situations come up, then it won't be so disturbed. That's why we go to the temple, we associate with devotees, we perform our duties. Getting better and better. The Yamadutas continue. Thus, Ajamil began spending whatever money he had inherited from his father to satisfy the prostitute with various material presentations so that she would remain pleased with him. Right? Because for the prostitute, you're giving things, then they're pleased. Because it's not as much about the relationship as it is about things. You know what I'm saying? Because here it's things, then you have a relationship. You know, the wife, you have a relationship, and then there's things. Right? So, it, you know, there's the masculine and feminine nature, but here is that they take the leading position. That's what's not understood. Prostitutes, when they deal with men, they take actually the masculine role. Right? Because they control the man. Right? Directly, not indirectly. Right? Wives can control indirectly, prostitutes control directly. So they're technically in the masculine position. Yes. Yes, because that's what moms do with sons. No? Yeah, so that's all. That's their idea. But what the mistake that they made is that's moms. That's not wives. Moms have husbands. You don't see that side. That's why it appears to be favorable. Because the prostitute takes the masculine role, like the mother takes the masculine role. The son's in the feminine role, the mother's in the masculine role. Therefore, the prostitutes, they take the masculine role. Right? Because the point is things work nicely, then, you know, income continues. Right? It's a job. Does that make sense? No, women's duties is one thing. The woman does her duty, that doesn't mean she's taking the masculine role. Women's duties without... Yes, no, but that's a different topic. That's a different topic here. See, you know, how you say, we're trying to be subtle. And you're talking about preachers are men. Yes. That's because it's like the men are preaching that women should do their duties, don't talk about men, because that's the way actually men would like it to be. Women who are preaching that, they just figure at least something will go right because the men are bozos and aren't going to do anything anyway. You understand? So that's a different thing. What we're talking about here is when it comes to intimate interaction, prostitute takes the lead role.
She's not preaching anything?
Huh?
She's not preaching anything? The prostitute?
Not preaching anything?
No, we're talking about preachers, men.
Well, she may be preaching that, you know, more money will be good. No. But we're getting what we're talking about here? See, as the woman is there, she's in the passive position. The man takes the active role to try to interact and create interaction. It's not that the woman may not, how you say, put out bait, but it still is left for the man to make the masculine step and take it. Prostitutes don't do that. They just take the active role and make things happen. You understand? So that's why it's even more, because then they're even less doing your duties. So now all he does is run around and try to get things for her. So in other words, he's just serving her.
So the marriage is falling apart, and the man is not doing anything. So when the woman tries to take the active role,
Yes, but that's active role, meaning, you know, yeah, she tries to be pleasant or this or that. But how long can you do that? How long will the woman do that? The marriage is falling apart. She tries to take the active role. That's all right. It's not that wives don't take that masculine role sometimes, but they do it temporarily. Because by taking the masculine role, then if the man's smart, he understands when the woman does take the masculine role, this is how she likes things to happen. So how she deals with the husband during that time is actually how she wants to be dealt with. Right? And there's a good chance that most likely he's done those things in the past. So it's not that something he can't do. So she's showing these are the things she appreciated. Does that make sense? But it will be temporary. She won't keep it up. Prostitutes can keep that up because they just keep changing men. Or in this case, because this guy is a real sucker and he just keeps, you know, providing for the next, looks like 68 years, you know. So, you know, bingo. Why go through a whole bunch of guys and, you know, this guy doesn't beat you up, doesn't behave badly, so better than, you know, going through the regular mill. Does that make sense? You catch what's the difference here? Yes, no? Ajamiya was attracted by her not because she was a great cook. Does that work now? The Brahmachari is moving.
Some scars are coming up. Just have to get up.
Oh, okay. just to get into more things. Okay. Just have the room gets up and walks out. All right. That's over the line for us. We're out of here. Okay. What? Yes.
The thing that prostitutes took Ajami as a husband, does that mean that woman usually is a man's role trying to kind of secure the facilities?
No, it means here is that it's not that prostitutes can't get married, you know. And that's so she's called a prostitute because that was her occupation, her background, and her character. So she's a married woman now, so she's technically not a prostitute, but it doesn't mean that her character didn't change. Her character changed. So the character's still that of a prostitute. Otherwise, why does he go down? Behind every great man is a woman. So if he's a great man, that means there's a woman behind him. So for Ajamil, there was his mother, there was his wife. Like this. But now the prostitute's behind him, so therefore now we see he's becoming, you know, I mean, you could say he's great, he's in the Bhagavatam, people know him all over the universe, but, you know, he's not known for, you know, good character and stuff. So this kind of great's, you know, less great. Does that make sense? So that side, that's something else. Does that make sense? So the point is that, you know, okay. Thus Ajamil began spending whatever money he had inherited from his father to satisfy the prostitute with various material presentations so that she would remain pleased with him. He gave up all his brahminical activities to satisfy the prostitute. Because his intelligence was pierced by the lustful glance of the prostitute, the victimized brahmana, Ajamil, engaged in sinful acts in her association. So he gave this up. Otherwise, if it was, you know, actual, you know, proper nature, then because she being a Shudra in this case, then he acts as a Shudra. She's cool with that. Right? She had been a Brahmin, then she would expect him to maintain the Brahminical standards. Right? But she wasn't, so therefore. Yeah. He even gave up the company. He even gave up the company of his very beautiful young wife, who had come from a very respectable Brahmin family. Although born of a Brahmin family, this rascal, bereft of intelligence because of the prostitutes' association, earned money somehow or other, regardless of whether properly or improperly, and used it to maintain the prostitutes' sons and daughters. Right? So first she was a maidservant in the house, and he's interacting with her, getting things for her, taking care of her. And so he just gives up, you know, taking care of his wife and everything like that. And so eventually we see later, it doesn't mention that they're living together. So at some point there must be something where they're not there anymore. This Brahmana irresponsibly spent his long lifetime transgressing all the rules and regulations of the Holy Scripture. Right, all the rules. So, you know, he's, you know, before Jagai Madhai, he was your example. Living extravagantly and eating food prepared by a prostitute. Right? So therefore, it seems that now she's become a good cook. But that wasn't why he was first attracted. You know, it's not that he walks by and all this and they're doing that and he doesn't care. You know, it says, we're looking for someone to help, you know, we're looking for some help in the house. Can you cook? And he's, oh, I'm a fabulous cook. And then that was it. He was gone. Therefore, he is full of sins. He is unclean and is addicted to forbidden activities. 64 to 67. Srila Prabhupada comments. Therefore, illicit sex is prohibited. One should be satisfied with his married wife. So it appears that the prostitute was there and there was illicit connection with this prostitute even while she was in his house and his wife was there. For even a slight deviation will create havoc. A Krishna-conscious grihastha should always remember this. He should always be satisfied with one wife and be peaceful simply by chanting the Hare Krishna mantra. Otherwise, at any moment, he may fall down from his good position, as exemplified in the case of Ajamiyo, 64 purport. Food prepared by an unclean, sinful man or woman, especially a prostitute, is extremely infectious. Ajamiyo ate such food, and therefore he was subjected to be punished by Yamaraj. Right? So it doesn't go this way, it goes the other way. We may cook food, give it to the prostitutes, but we don't eat what they get cooked. Right? You know, I've heard of, you know, some Sankirtan where the red light district was just around the corner from the temple. So because the devotees would walk by there every day, you know, then when it came time for the marathon, they asked them, hey, we have these books, we're doing this and that, do you mind selling them to your customers? And they say, yeah, why not? Because they used to come and take prasad at the temple, right? Because it's free food. And so then during the marathon, then that devotee would just bring prasad over like that and bring more books and collect the money. So it goes that way, not this way. We don't read their books, we don't eat their food, and we don't give them money. Right? Okay. Yes. Yes, yes. Because who's attracted to who? She's attracted to him, then they can come up. Right? She's attracted to him, she wants to be like him, so then she can come up. But she's not. She's just attracted by his money, so... The Yamadutas conclude, this man, Ajamiyo, did not undergo atonement. Therefore, because of his sinful life, we must take him into the presence of Yamaraj for punishment. There, according to the extent of his sinful acts, he will be punished and thus purified. Srila Prabhupada comments, the Vishnudutas had forbidden the Yamadutas to take Ajamiyo to Yamaraj, and therefore the Yamadutas explained that taking such a man to Yamaraj was appropriate. Since Ajamil had not undergone atonement for his sinful acts, he was to be taken to Yamaraj to be purified. When a man commits murder, he becomes sinful, and therefore he also must be killed. Otherwise, after death, he must suffer many sinful reactions. Similarly, punishment by Yamaraj is a process of purification for the most abominable sinful persons. Therefore, the Yamadutas requested the Vishnudutas not to obstruct their taking ajamil to Yamaraj, right? Because you see, they're high class in this, and they've stopped him, and they've asked questions, they've answered them, so they're figuring by answering them nicely, now they'll understand, now they'll let them take it. Like that. So that's their idea. Right? Important verses. Six 1:13 to 14. Tapasa brahmacharena samena cha damena cha jagena satya sauchabhyam yamena niyamena va deha deha vag buddhijam dhira dharma gya shradhayan vita kshipyant yagham mahad api venu gulmam ivan nala. To concentrate the mind, one must observe a life of celibacy and not fall down. One must undergo the austerity of voluntarily giving up sense enjoyment. One must then control the mind and senses, give charity, be truthful, clean, and nonviolent. Follow the regulative principles and regularly chant the holy name of the Lord. Thus a sober and faithful person who knows the religious principles is temporarily purified of all sins performed with his body, words, and mind. These sins are like the dried leaves of creepers beneath a bamboo tree, which may be burned by fire, although their roots remain to grow again at the first opportunity. Right, so doing all this, if it's not connected to Krishna, then will destroy, you know, past sins and will, you know, dry up that kind of endeavor. But because the roots aren't taken up, they come up again, just like with Ajamil. You could say that had cut the creeper off by his brahminical activities, but the root wasn't taken out. So when he saw the prostitute and the Shudra, therefore it came up again. Does that make sense? Yeah. So this, we get that. But at the same time, this is connected to Krishna, right? Then a life of celibacy means that then there's no illicit activity. That's considered celibate, right? So therefore, one maintains that, so he doesn't fall down. Undergo the austerity of voluntary giving up sense gratification, so the senses are always engaged in service to Krishna. Right? One must then control the mind and senses, give charity, right? Be truthful, always talk about Krishna, clean, and non-violent. So clean means not doing anything mundane, and the body is kept clean. And non-violent means you don't disturb other living entities. Follow the regulative principles, and regularly chant the holy name of the Lord, right? So if you follow it in devotional service, then that gets rid of the creeper and gets rid of the root. If you do those activities only and it's not connected to devotional service, it'll get rid of the creeper. But if you do those activities and it's connected to Krishna, it'll get rid of the root. So the root's the most important. So therefore, these things have to be done in connection with Krishna, right? And the materialists, they may do these things not in connection to Krishna, so they'll get a partial result. But eventually it'll be for naught, because it'll all be lost. 6.1.15 Kechit kevalaya bhaktya vasudeva parayana agham dunvanti karchnyena viharam iva bhakshara. Only a rare person who has adopted complete, unalloyed devotional service to Krishna can uproot the weeds of sinful actions with no possibility that they will revive. He can do this simply by discharging devotional service, just as the sun can immediately dissipate fog by its rays. Right? So if you come to the position of unalloyed, that means everything is uprooted. But if you're in devotional service, means whatever degree one's developed, that much is uprooted. So devotional, if you continue, then it comes to the point of completion, and then everything's up to you. 6.1.40 Veda prani hito dharmo hyadharmas tad viparyaya Vedo narayanas sakshat swayambhur iti shushuma. The Yamadutas reply, that which is prescribed in the Vedas constitutes dharma, the religious principles, and the opposite of that is irreligion. So what's not prescribed by the Veda? The Vedas are directly the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayana, and are self-born. Thus we have heard from Yamaraj. So That's the point. The devotees follow this because it comes from the Lord, but they do it to please the Lord. Therefore, they complete that first verse. Yes? Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinda ki, Jaya Nitya Gaura Premanand.